Hello, and welcome to another edition of Earth Mom Recycled. Thanks to the goodness of Ken Morris and Alan Stevens, this is being brought to you. It is a recycling of my radio show on WBAI Radio in New York City. And I really hope you enjoy it. Today I'm talking to Cody Hall. He is with the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe. He's a Lakota man, and he is with the standoff at the Dakota Access Pipeline in Cannonball, North Dakota, where many people are gathering, native and non-native, to stop this pipeline, which threatens to pollute the waters of the Missouri River and pollute a lot more than that. And then I'll be talking to Les Jamison, who has been working on the 9/11 truth movement for over a decade. So I hope you enjoyed the show. All the best to you, and thanks.
There's something special that 6 o'clock in the morning when it's still too early to knock, and the dusty light shines down on the block and reflects up and down on the hands of the clock. 6 o'clock, 6 o'clock.
Good morning. It's Earth Mom, and it's Saturday, August 27th, and we're here in New York City, and we are online. Don't have any who, what, where, when, where, why updates on the situation. We're offline with our transmitter, but we are broadcasting online. So good morning and welcome. And happy about this show today. I've got two wonderful guests. We're going to start with Cody Hall of the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe. He's a Lakota rights activist and media spokesperson for the Red Warrior Camp on the Cannonball River in North Dakota. because he and several thousand others are camped out there, and what they're doing is stopping the Dakota Access Pipeline, a 1,200-mile pipeline that would go from North Dakota to the Gulf, crossing the Missouri River in two places, threatening the water in that area for 18 million people. It's more than the tribe and the people at the res at Standing Rock in North Dakota and South Dakota. This is something for all of us. So I got to talk to Cody on Thursday. Today he's in L.A. doing a benefit and, you know, getting support. And there is so much support. Over 3,500 people are there now supporting. So not only natives, but everyone. And then in the second half, we're going to talk with Les Jamieson, who is the organizer of an upcoming event here in the city for September 11th. And it's Justice in Focus, 9/11, 15 years later. So I guess what we'll do without further ado is go to our interview with Cody. Hope you are listening online. And pay attention to the interview because it's really cool. Cody talks about how four Native women stopped construction in a very peaceful way. You know, there's real power in gentleness and, you know, and spirit. And spirit is all the power. And they stopped construction. And with that construction stoppage, the stocks for the company, Energy Transfer Partners, plummeted. So this is a lesson to be learned by everyone here in the States and everyone on Mother Earth, because that we do have the power to stop these big giants from desecrating water and desecrating Mother Earth. We all need clean water and air to breathe. No water, no life. Okay, we're going to go to the interview. Thanks.
The actual encampment of the first group, the Sacred Stone Camp, mm-hmm. Started camping back in April to raise awareness of what could possibly happen. But without, they didn't know the anticipation of this, thousands upon thousands of people showing up. And another camp started up shortly after construction started to begin at the protest site. And that's what was called the Red Warrior Camp. So, and that has just developed within a little over a week now. I think we're about day nine. That we've been occupying right there at the it's like a mile wide and a mile in length as far as the area that we're given, if that maybe it's a half a mile. I think it's a half a mile by a half a mile, and we literally have 3,500 people camping at a site.
And you're growing every day, right?
Yes, and we're growing every day.
Let me ask you something then. You're saying it's like a mile and a half by a mile and a half. Did they give you a designated area that you have to stay within?
No, not exactly. Okay. It's about a half a mile mm-hmm. by a half a mile. So it's land that the Army Corps of Engineers have kind of had a buffer zone on there. Mm-hmm. They haven't given it to the Standing Rock tribe, even though it falls under the 1851 treaty that was violated. And so it's kind of at it's at a teeter-totter feeling. Like, I think the Army Corps engineer wants, the tribe to take it over, mm-hmm. but it's back and forth. It's not on the reservation. It's just right across the river. There's a little the Cannonball River runs right between the north border of the Standing Rock Reservation, and then right after that is that buffer zone that the Army Corps engineer has. So this land space. So it's not a lot, but it's sufficient right now for the groups coming out, the people coming out to come out and show support physically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And do you feel like all of this, all of the people coming and showing their support, will actually stop the building of this pipeline?
Yes. Everybody coming that's coming here has a strong spirit and a gift to help the cause,
mm-hmm.
To put the pressure on this, you know, these energy companies and these oil companies, so that we stop this slow progression of this pipe being built.
Mm-hmm.
That's the mindset that we have at the camp, is that this whole route doesn't exist. But when you look online, you see the proposed route.
Mm-hmm.
We want to shut that whole thing down, and it's gonna start with us here in North Dakota. We're gonna backtrack it so that we abolish the rest of the pipeline that's coming out of the northwest corner of the state of North Dakota,
mm-hmm.
and we will not let it progress from this point going down through South Dakota, Iowa, and making its way down to the, you know, to the Gulf Coast. So,
and what you're doing impacts everyone, does it? Let's talk about the cause, the immediate cause, which is the water of Standing Rock, and then the larger cause. I mean, which is basically Mother Earth and its water for all of us.
Yes, this is a humanity issue.
Mm-hmm.
This involves every one of us,
yep.
regardless of our skin color, because there's alternatives to these types of energies, these types of systems. There's no alternative for water. I do not know of a scientist or a chemist that has come up with a plan B if we ever run out of water. That is not in the game plan. That we know that for a fact. But, you know, we, like I said, this is a humanity issue, so we need to band together and take this fight head on. It just happens to be that the front lines is in Indian country right now, right here on the Standing Rock Reservation. And so, you know, at times, I mean, that it, you know, people say it's a Lakota issue. It's
mm-hmm.
really not. It's
mm-hmm.
it's a humanity issue, and we just happen to be on the front lines and asking for support for other allies and groups and just people in general to hear our story and help us take this fight on, because we really are up against a mongrel of a corporation upon corporations. And so the task, some people have stated that we are taking on, it's like, you know, we're taking on this Goliath.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I say in response that we're going to take it down as well. So I'm not fearful of who we're facing or what we're facing up against. I believe that I have the utmost faith in the people that we will take this Goliath of greed down.
You know, this may sound funny, but it's almost good fortune that it's happening in Lakota country. Not because it's happening by you, not me, but because you guys are such defenders of Mother Earth that you're bringing this cause forward, and you more than anyone else know, love, and understand her, and bring this issue to the forefront, then the rest of us can get behind you and learn from this. Because once you stop this, then it means stopping this going on in all other places.
Yes, you know, I hope that this generates people's spirit, if they're not able to make it here to this camp physically,
mm-hmm.
but in regions, you know, and throughout different continents across the world, to say, you know, if this group of people can stop this, then we can stop anything as well. And you know, that's how we are as a society. You know, we're looking for inspiration and motivation, you know, on a daily basis. Whether we're out loud, you know, saying it and seeking it, versus maybe kind of, you know, behind closed doors, you know, looking for that as well. Either way, we are looking for that type of inspiration in our lives, and it's existing every day at the Red Warrior Camp. You know, when we go to sleep to when we wake up, you know, that's a lot of energy that's exerted. And so people that come in with encouraging words, we live in a society now where social media entertains us more than it is, you know, TV.
Yeah.
Those encouraging words that campers are reading fuels them. It inspires them to keep their drive up as well, even through the cold days. You know, the other mm-hmm. day, last weekend, it rained all day and it was mm-hmm. blowing. And, you know, and we all know that, you know, if you're outside camping and you're in that element, that's a tough element,
yep.
and it can break you down. And, you know, and we have to rely on each other as human beings to pick each other up and to encourage each other and to love each other. And those are key spiritual ways that we're taught in our culture, is the love and compassion that we have not only for our people, but people in general. And so it's evident every day at the camp of how we're still keeping that fire lit within all of us.
And what kind of support are you getting from the local non-native people, the ranchers and the farmers? Or are you getting any pushback? What's the take on that? What's going on?
We actually have farmers and ranchers that drive by and honk mm-hmm. in support, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They stop in real quick and say, please keep it up, because some of them have actually backed away. They told these energy and oil companies that they do not want them on their lands. Others, you know, they bought into the system.
Mm-hmm.
They've been bribed and paid off. And of course, they feel happy, and they feel, you know, when that happens, it's literally like winning the lotto without playing the lotto.
Mm.
And these people, that's their... They're taking it, and they're just like, hey, you know what? You guys got to fall into that system. I'm willing to take on the struggle of not having anything financially
mm-hmm.
versus the fight for our people, because this is history in the making. And when people look back at it, you know, at this moment, they're going to say, what did individuals do, or what did groups do to help humanity? And you're going to see the ones that were, you know, that fell into the greed, that got paid off real easy.
Mm-hmm.
And where their, you know, where their trail went versus the people that were willing to take on such a deep, deep struggle and to say, you know what, for the betterment of humanity, I really risked it and put it all on the line, you know, for the love of my fellow man and my fellow woman, you know. So that sends more waves than it does, you know, with somebody taking a bribe of some sorts. So.
Yeah. And the people that that own land there, the farmers and the ranchers, that didn't opt into the program, but they're still plagued by the issue of eminent domain, where they can still be on the land and put the pipeline under their land. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. That's the rule of kind of, you know, the government, the way that we live in this, again, society of control of government.
Yeah.
Even though one might say, no, I don't want it built, you're still going to have state government officials that are going to come in and just say, you know what, you got to let them on no matter what. And, you know, as much as it's a big bully, you know,
yeah.
Corporation as well. So.
And you guys are there until when?
We're here until the defeat of the pipeline.
Yes.
And if that ends up being until... the first part of next year, 2017,
yeah.
We're committed to being here, because Enbridge, their permit ends, I believe it's either January or February of 2017. They have to show their investors, I believe they took out I've seen some reports where they took out a $6 billion loan so that this pipeline can be built, and they have about $350 million left of that loan. They thought that they would be a lot further than where they're at right now, and so their investors are very frightened by the stoppage of this pipeline from the people that have done this action, because again, you know, that's a huge loan to be taken out. But, you know, they have to show their investors progress, and they're not making progress. And so you know, we're in it for that long haul until that permit is up, and they failed to show their investors that they couldn't get this pipeline built. And when that happens, you know, I don't think that any investor is going to re-up, you know, on a contract with them to say, let's keep it building. If they didn't get it done in X amount of years, you know, that's proof that they couldn't even get it done within that time period that they first came with their proposition. So
that is excellent.
So we are in here for the long haul.
Awesome. And one other question. I was reading that the governor stopped the water supply and also their medical trucks. How does that impact you? How's that working for you?
That actually, when they left, mm-hmm. When the governor made a call to have the first aid stations pulled and the water tanks pulled, mm-hmm. We replaced them later that day. And so the impact of that wasn't much of a few-hour delay, if that.
Wonderful.
The local tribes around Standing Rock went way beyond that. They didn't even, you know, they didn't even seek a call. They just said, we need to look after our friends and relatives up there, you know, or around there, and they provided help as soon as possible. My tribe, the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe, shipped up huge water buffalo tanks that were implemented later that afternoon. And so they had running water. They still, you know, like I said, we still have that running water for campers that, you know, that need it for their tents and need mm-hmm. it for their area, along with the cooking shacks that have been set up. And a lot of people have brought in huge canvas tents to be just erected and used as first aid stations. We had, you know, people that, other organizations, some wanted to remain anonymous. Mm-hmm. Some organizations did, and they provided the first aid equipment and first aid needs that the campers, you know, eventually will, you know, will fall upon on. So, yes, that call was made within just by social media. You know, what can we do for our friends and relatives? And that, you know, people, a lot of tribes answered that locally, and a lot of individuals themselves. You know, like I said, to provide the needs and assistance. Someone went right away to, you know, Bismarck, Mandan area, to Sam's Club, and just started buying abundant stuff that we need to keep at bay. Because Governor Dalrymple for North Dakota mm-hmm. put the people, he put their health at risk when he did that.
Yeah.
And that just shows his value as a human being who doesn't have compassion to say, you know, let's, it goes back to the old days, when they starved the Indian, you know, when they killed all the buffalo, no need for the meat, no need for mm-hmm. anything. They just killed the buffalo because they knew that, that's how you're going to starve the Indian. And that too is a health thing. They obviously, the governor took notion of that and said, well, let's put their health at risk and let's pull, what is needed on a daily basis. So it didn't work, though. You know, his tactic didn't work. So.
Good, good, good. And the beat goes on, but it's really time for a new rhythm. And on that, how can we help you? Because I know that we can support you monetarily, or you also have an Amazon list of things you need. What's the best way to help you in addition to prayer? But what's the best ways?
For those that want to donate monetarily, we're asking that the donations be sent to the owakuinternational.org site.
Okay,
they're working directly with us. Their
great.
Representatives are staying with us at the camp.
Yep.
And so any of the money, that's a nonprofit organization. And mm-hmm. so you will, you know, get your receipts, you know, mm-hmm. that you need to file. You know, if you want to, you know, ooh. For tax purposes okay. and stuff, but
let me just
as
spell
far
that.
As the,
that's
sorry, go ahead.
No worries. OweAkuInternational.org, and I've been pronouncing it incorrectly, but OweAkuInternational.org, and you can send your donations.
And then, as far as camping supplies mm-hmm. and food donations and all that, we. Go to our Facebook page. It's called Red Warrior Camp, and you're going to see a press release that shows you the Amazon list, along with the link or along with the address that you can send these items to. Yesterday we received boxes, and today, this morning, as I'm looking out the door, the UPS FedEx guy is dropping boxes off left and right. So, you know, we take that and we drop it off to the camp. And, you know, like I said, everything and anything is greatly appreciated and used, because a lot of our campers are women and some children, and the men that are with us, they're helping take the front lines and helping with the protection of people from all nations. We have at least over 70 nations represented, tribal nations represented at the camp that stand in solidarity with us and support, and a lot of non-native allies that have come forward. We just had Amnesty International show up yesterday, and they're there today and taking note, and they came in. It was it was just kind of an uplifting beat to people's spirit as well to see that, because now what the governor is trying to say, you know, make us into some bad ad camp.
Violent,
we're not.
Yeah, and you're not.
Yes, it's you know, the support from the people throughout the nation. We have support from all of North America and South America. Last week we had some brothers and sisters from South America that flew up to stand in support with us and camp for a while. And so, yes, I mean, I get excited when I think of those things. You know, the narrative that we're speaking is the truth. And you get an insight, really, of what's happening. Last Monday, when construction was halted, not many people know this, and it's so inspiring, that four women stopped the construction that day. They risked legal proceedings that could have come their way. They jumped the fence, and they ran to stand in front of the earth movers, these huge earth movers, and they stopped the tractors from working, and they forced the drivers to get out. They forced that construction company to stop, and they haven't been back since. And I know two of those women personally, out of the four, and they're mothers. And, well, I tell you, I'm not afraid to admit it with no shame at all. But, you know, when I saw that happen, when they came back to us, I gave them a hug and I cried. And I was so inspired by what they did, their action. They fired up the whole camp, you know, the people that were at that site. And I tell you, you know, that in itself is a huge story that people need to share, because four women stopped the construction of what happened that day. And it caused such a huge ripple effect that the closing day for this on the stock exchange, Enbridge lost $2 million. And they opened up with a $2 million loss to start Tuesday. So these four women literally put it to this energy company and the oil company, or this energy company's pocket, and really put it hurt on them. And now investors for Enbridge are scared because they want to see progress. And they liked it in weeks, you know, before this, because they were making money, and now they're not making money. And it's a huge concern for them, which it should be. And but yes, people need to share that story. I tell you that, I still get goosebumps every now and then when I think about it. And when I see these women, I just kind of, you know, and I'm just like, wow, you know. And I just, that's all I can say, because I just, you know, I love them so much that for their action that they did, it's still inspiring.
That is so excellent. That's the real power, truth and love. And they came from this honest place of love for Mother Earth and caring for everyone. That is just the best. It's totally the best. Wow. One last question. As you continue to expand, which you will, because more and more people will come to support, will you have enough room for everyone?
Yes, we will. In fact, some of them are camping on the reservation side now. Mm-hmm. There's a large flat area right by the Cannonball River.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people have taken that place now to make camp. And so, yes, I mean, we do have the room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the space isn't an issue. So we're, you know, like I said, if people are able to send mowers and, you know, and chainsaws and axes, there's a lot of wooded area there that we can mow down and cut down and use for, you know, for campfires and all that. But, you know, there's a lot of places, throughout the area. We have people even on my reservation, the Cheyenne River Reservation, that are cutting wood every day and bringing up cords and cords of wood by truck or trailer, or both, you know, just to help campers, just to, you know, keep the fires going. And, you know, this is a huge thing. This is a moment in history which we as humans can look back to and say, what part did we play? What did we do to protect Mother Earth? Because she made this call years ago, and she asked for help. And we as Lakota people, through ceremony, heard that message loud and clear, and we took that action. You know, like I said, the way we look at it is she provides to us with medicines. She provides the food that really gets consumed by the things that we eat. The things that we grow, and so on a bigger scale, we have to look at it as human beings that, you know, we have to protect her. We have to protect her because she provides so much, you know, for our daily existence that, you know, it's only right that we do this. So that's what I ask of, you know, your listeners, mm-hmm. is to hear our plight. Our plight is a simple thing, and please join us in helping protect and defend Mother Earth.
We will. Cody Hall, thank you. And thank you for all you're doing, because you must have a flashing sign on your tent or your home that says 24/7, because I know you're dealing with media, and you're dealing with media from around the world at all different times, and you're very willing to do whatever you have to do. Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That was Cody Hall. Cody Hall is a member of the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe. He's a Lakota rights activist and media spokesperson for the Red Warrior Camp on the Cannonball River in North Dakota. To help this cause, you can find them on Facebook at Red Warrior Camp. And also to donate, and donating's really important, to go to Oweaku, and I'm still mispronouncing this, international.org. That's Oweaku international.org. Right now we're going to go to a piece of music that is so very fitting for this. It's No No Keshekesh by Buffy St. Marie, and Keshekesh translates into greasy guts, and it's a greedy little puppy that eats their food and everybody else's and just can't get enough. And that sort of fits for energy transfer partners and all these big conglomerates that just want to rape and steal from Mother Earth and think, use the reasoning of it's creating jobs, but it's creating jobs and then there's no pure drinking water. It just doesn't make sense. So here's No No Keshekesh.
Water rights, good mother nature on a run.
Yes, time has really come today. It really and truly has in so many, many ways that I don't even want to begin to expound upon. So, my next guest is Les Jamison. That was Time Has Come Today by the Chambers Brothers. Before that was Buffy St. Marie with No No Kesha Kesh. Both songs, extremely timely. My next guest is Les Jamison, who has studied the alternative research into 9/11 since November 2001. And he's been very active in the 9/11 truth community since January of 2004. Les attended two of the four 9/11 commission hearings and five of the eight hearings by the NIST investigation into why the buildings collapsed, which has given him an up-close realization of the depth and scope of the official cover-up. Les has been central in planning large 9/11 symposiums every year in the New York City area. And throughout 2014 and 2015, Les led many outreach actions at the 9/11 Memorial and Museum. And since October 2014, Les has spearheaded an effort to generate grassroots support for legislation to release the 28 pages from the Congressional Joint Inquiry on 9/11, which did occur on July 15th of this year. And now Les has been organizing and is the organizer of a two-day symposium coming up that brings together lawyers, scholars, and technical experts in the pursuit of 9/11 justice 15 years later. And he's here today to talk about that symposium and to kind of get us updated on the 28 pages that came out a month ago and to see what's going on. Welcome, Les Jamison.
Thank you so much, Helena. Wonderful to be with you.
Great to have you. You know, it's funny. I was just thinking about when I first met you, and I'm not sure of the year, but I think it was over at St. Mark's in the Bowery, and it was at a 9/11 event, a talk. And I believe Willie Rodriguez was there, the janitor from the towers.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. We did a three-year series there at that location in St. Mark's in the Bowery, and I still run into people who used to go and see the events every Sunday and tell me, Les, that was, I learned so much.
Mm-hmm.
We showed films every week, and that was a very, very eventful period. And we've continued ever since, Helena, with actions, activism here in the city, and it's so important, New York being the epicenter of the 9/11 attacks.
Mm.
And this year is no different. And here we are at the 15th anniversary, which is a milestone. And there's been some major developments in this past year, especially surrounding the 28 pages, as you spoke of just now. There have been four different press conferences in Washington regarding legislation for with the efforts to release the 28 pages. I attended three of those and learned so much. And this has served actually as a new platform for the 9/11 truth activist community to take our efforts to a new level, the legislative level. And this is just unprecedented when it comes to 9/11 issues. And the 28 pages this past year, momentum started building actually last December, I noticed, right after actually the Paris attacks in November, late November of last year. Then starting December, more and more congressmen started to wake up and say, you know something, those 28 pages, I think, have information in there that reflects on how we deal with terrorism. And they started to slowly build the momentum in terms of reading the 28 pages, because they're classified. They, in order to read them, the congressman has to, they had to make a request to the House Intelligence Committee and go through a process by which then they would be allowed access to the secret location where they are, they were located. And that started to pick up as of December and then just continued. And in December of last year, there were only 28 co-sponsors of the legislation. It's H.R. 14. That stands for House Resolution 14. Well, by April, there were 72.
Leslie, okay. May I ask you something, though? What was found in those 28 pages? Anything of substance? Anything that pointed
yeah.
to anything? Can you give us some examples, please?
Yes, absolutely. Within the 28 pages, there are references, many references, to funding of two of the accused hijackers that were in San Diego. And this funding, it names names and organizations, most notably the Saudi ambassador to the U.S. by the name of Prince Bandar bin Sultan.
Bandar
also,
Bush, hey?
Also known as Bandar Bush. He was nicknamed Bandar Bush because of his the close relationship they've had for years and years with the Bush family. Yeah, that's the guy. And his wife. And this is in the 28 pages. So 74,000 in just one of the quotes. It's listed right there and coming from a Riggs Bank account, Riggs Bank. And there's much more in there. I think that in the 28 pages, you can see literally foreknowledge of the events. It even mentions of an FBI informant and an FBI asset that was facilitating everything that two of the alleged hijackers were doing when they came into the country. There's one character by the name of Omar al-Bayoumi, another one Osama Baznan, and these people were known Saudi agents, and they helped these guys, two of the alleged hijackers, Almidar and al-Hazmi, when they first came into the country, and helped them to get an apartment, helped them to get like driver's licenses and even into a flight school. And by the way, these guys did not do well in flight school, and the reports are they could barely fly anything, so let's make sure that's clear. And, you know, Bob Graham has made this point, and that these young men barely spoke English, they had no experience in Western culture, and they were poorly educated. So this is, you know, what he's asking, and some of these politicians, is how in the world could these people have pulled off such a complex event on their own? Well, the answer is they couldn't pull it off on their own.
Gotcha.
It's totally implausible. There were support networks around the country. So this is starting to unfold, you know, and this is a major aspect of everything being covered here in the 28 pages issue.
Thank you, Les. I don't mean to cut you off, but just in respect to time, because we have like 5 3/4 minutes left, I want to talk about the symposium coming up.
Perfect.
So.
All the details, by the way, I'll give a website and a phone number.
Okay.
For 911 justiceinfocus.org. I'll repeat, 911 justiceinfocus.org, or call 510-900-8340. And this year we have a 2-day symposium on September 10th and 11th at the Great Hall of Cooper Union in New York City, down in the East Village. That's at 7th Street and 3rd Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be all-day events starting 10 a.m. in the morning going through to 6:30. We have incredible speakers, researchers, renowned academics. I'll name a few names here. Mm-hmm. We have Mark Crispin Miller. We have Daniel Sheehan, a renowned attorney who has done some of the most highest-profile cases in the country, such as the Pentagon Papers, Three Mile Island event, Iran-Contra litigation, things, you know, landmark cases. he's coming to New York, which is just an incredible development. We also have Judge Ferdinand Impazamato, who is the honorary president of the Supreme Court of Italy, and he litigated a false flag operation called Operation Gladio, and in Italy, and also, you know, mafia trials and things of that nature, and just an incredible record. And so we have an international aspect this year. We have William Pepper, the attorney who litigated the case that exonerated James Earl Ray in the Martin Luther King shooting. And we also have Richard Gage, mm-hmm. founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, many, many, many more. And it's all at the 9/11justiceinfocus.org. And this is going to be so important because there's a new level of activism in that we have attorneys at this point in time who have been examining the physical evidence, examining every angle of the 9/11 attacks and the deception, the official myths and the official cover-ups, and presenting analysis and strategies this year at this symposium. And day two is going to be a full day of panels with lawyers listening to expert witnesses talking about the collapses of the towers, 1, 2, and 7, which was the one that wasn't even hit by an airplane and mm-hmm. fell at a free fall. And day one, we're going to be talking about the 28 pages. We're going to have a panel on the development of ISIS and as part of what's called strategy of tension, which is what is the underlying impetus for this perpetual war on terror, which is based on fraud, based because it's all connected to the 9/11 events, which were the neocons' new Pearl Harbor. So we have quite an incredible and historic event planned for the world, and we urge the listeners here in New York and the surrounding areas to come. And we have a huge, incredible hall at the Grand Hall of Cooper Union, and be there in person to witness this for yourself, because it is going to be historic in so many ways.
The Grand Hall is awesome. It's also going to be online, is it not?
It will be streamed, yes. And we'll, of course, film it and record it, but it's not the same as being there.
No, nothing's ever the same, but in case you can't make it, but yeah, to be there is the thing. And I was really intrigued in the 1 minute that we have left of the recently formed Lawyers Committee for 9/11. That's got to be good, just to really dig in. And Richard Gage is awesome. He's been a guest on BAI and on Pacifica many times with Bonnie Faulkner. I've had the opportunity to interview him as well.
Yeah.
And, what always sticks out in my mind is when he shows other steel-framed skyscrapers on fire and not coming down, and yet you see the implosion of the Twin Towers, how they just sort of came down like a controlled demolition. When you see something, when you see a hotel coming down in Vegas and it's a controlled demolition and boom, it's like a pancake, and same thing happened here. Funny about that, eh?
Exactly.
Yeah.
The characteristics are totally the same. So, yeah, absolutely. And another important development, real quick to say.
Real quick.
That,
2 seconds.
There's a 9/11
Negative
Truth
two
Action
seconds.
Project that you'll want to know about. That'll be covered on day one as well, where we're taking our movement building to a whole new level.
Great.
And that's got to happen.
Les, time's up, but your website once more, please.
Yes, 911justiceinfocus.com. Or call 510-900-8340.
Thank you, Les Jamieson. We'll see you there. All the best.
You bet. See you there. Thanks so much, Helena.
You're welcome. This is Earth Mom, Helena, at WBAI-FM, which I neglected to say in the middle of this. Thank you all for listening on the web. Thank you all for listening in the archives. We're going out with Carry It On by Buffy St. Marie, and she dedicated this to Chief Orville Looking Horse when she played here in New York last week. And it's for everyone. We all need to carry it on and go forward and doing the right thing. Please contribute to the Red Warrior Camp by going to oweakuinternational.org and find them at Red Warrior Camp on Facebook. They're doing a great thing for all of us, and that's keeping clean water clean and not allowing this Dakota Access Pipeline to go through. Thank you, Sean Rhodes. I'm telling you, thank you on the air for a change. I appreciate you, and I appreciate your help. Randy Credico is coming up next with Your Crazy If You're Up This Early, and I honestly think we are all crazy. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Hold your head up, lift the top of your mind, put your eyes on the earth, lift your heart to your own home planet. What do you see? What is your attitude? Are you here to improve or damage? So take heart and take care of your link with life. It's beautiful if you got the sense to take care of your source of perfection.